All right, thanks for joining another episode of the podcast. Today we've got Alex Erickson with us, and you're in the record books at UW-Madison, being a Badger, right? I mean, you're in the top 10, one of the top 10 receivers that's probably come through there statistically.
Yeah,
seems like you're across some of those categories. 8 or 9 years, 9 years in the NFL.
Yeah, just finished my 8th year last year, so we'll see what this year brings.
Yep. But. And then he's been working on, you know, stacking up money to then be able to make that transition into life. And so that's kind of what brought him into my life, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, where we just started kind of chatting about different types of investments, business, whatnot. I don't know. Maybe you started following me on Instagram, or how'd we connect? Do you remember?
Well, we did that. You did that Pro Circle talk.
That's right.
With I think Jeff Driscoll set that up with you. And we started doing the calls.
So Jeff connected us.
Then, yeah. That and well, he was telling me about you, and then he's like, he's from Stoughton. I was like, well, it's right in my backyard.
Right.
And so it led into, I mean, we do the Zoom calls, you know, and you were teaching us about underwriting and management. And, it was great stuff. Cause it was higher level than what, you know, I was accustomed to, rather just the back of the napkin.
Yep.
Does it make sense or not? You kind of go with it, but it was, you know, more of a deep dive into more of the fundamentals of management and like the assumptions and like what you should be looking at underwriting and how big underwriting is when you're analyzing deals.
Yeah. And I mean, I've always had a passion to, obviously athletics played a huge role in my life. I mean, not to the extent you are an athlete, but playing Division III football with All American. And I really wanted to, you know, I wanted that to be scoring the game winning touchdown in a conference championship game. I wanted that to be not the highlight of my life, but the springboard of my life, where it was just one story. It wasn't the story when I was 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, right? So I really wanted that to be the springboard and really be able to use athletics and the work ethic that it takes, the focus, the the discipline, you got to be able to be resilient. I wanted to be able to take all that, box it all up, and go use it in the real world. And I didn't want to just be you know, all that I had and used in sports. I didn't want that to just go to waste then once real life started. I wanted that to be the start. And I think a lot of athletes kind of lose their way in that transition.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a challenge of personally, professionally, like as an athlete, especially when you've been doing it for so long, you know, your schedule from the time you get up to the time you go back home, like is booked, you know, especially in college, and then you get to NFL, it's a little looser, but it's still like your whole day is on an iPad. Like, here's where your meetings, here's where this is it.
And workout, eat.
You know. Yeah. Workout, eat, meetings, practice, room. Meeting. Yeah. And then like, rehab. And then you get done and it's like, here you go.
Yeah.
No one's telling you what to do. No one's, got the schedule for you. You got to figure out yourself. But I think what you were attesting to, you know, we all have a drive, you know, we've all achieved, you know, especially if you played at the college level, professional level, like there's something that was different about you that you were able to push through, because there's a lot of tough moments in sports, you know, there's a lot of failure, adversity, and the ability to bounce back from that as a person is just a skill that's learned, I think, from getting knocked down and get yourself back up, getting knocked down, get yourself back up. And eventually, you know, life's going to knock you down and you don't even think twice. You get back up and you just keep going forward. And so that's why I think, you know, guys do struggle, but guys end up figuring it out and they end up being successful after they're done playing as well.
Yeah. What was it like being a 5-star athlete in high school?
5 no stars. Yeah.
Yeah. 0-star athlete.
Yeah. 0 stars.
Small town.
Small town.
Which town again?
Darlington, Wisconsin.
Who's from Fenimore? Was that Luke Swan?
That was Luke Swan.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Darlington.
Yeah, Luke was actually a coach when I got to Wisconsin. Okay. So it was a guy I grew up watching, obviously. But yeah, no stars. I don't know. I'm glad I didn't play in today's age where it's, you know, you really got to market yourself to be recruited and all that. Like, I hate it. I just wanted to go play. And that's what I loved about Wisconsin. You know, I think it's a little more flashy now than what's ever been. But it was just, you come here, you play. You come here, you do things the right way. You're going to get an opportunity to play. And then what you do with that opportunity is up to you. But and that was just for me. It was like, cause I wasn't I played quarterback in high school. And then when I got to college, I switched to receiver. And so, you know, day one, my time in Wisconsin, my first time playing receiver. And so it was like, you know, drinking out of a fire hose, you know, trying to learn. But you're also getting the best coaching, right? And you're also, I didn't have bad habits. I'd never done it before. So it was like, you're getting the best coaching, you're getting the best, nutrition, the best weight training. And so I was able to develop really fast in that. And obviously, I was able to make it into a career.
What was the recruiting process like for you? Who'd you have options to go play for?
Man, I was going to play. Well, I was actually going to play basketball. I was going to go to Stevens Point. I actually committed to go to Stevens Point, and I was getting recruited by the WEAC schools and then a couple D2s for football. And then, you know, I talked to Wisconsin a little bit, but nothing really came of it. And then one day I got a call from the staff and they said, hey, we want you to walk on, but it won't be till the spring of – so I graduated in 2011, so it wouldn't have been the spring till 2012.
Oh, really?
Because they didn't have a spot for me. So they said, you got to come, just go to school, and then you'll walk on in the spring.
That's got
to
be challenging right there. Because – so, because you're graduating school, right? Everyone else that is going to play that, you know, a lot of other guys that are getting recruited to play are playing that year, yeah, or going in and getting redshirted at least to get the practice. You're having to basically. So, did you have to coach your way through and train yourself through the summer, the fall, the winter into the next spring, or were you with the team at all? Or
no, so I wasn't the team at all, and I had a broken wrist, I couldn't even really do anything until probably the fall anyway. So then I was just lifting on my own. I had a family friend that had a gym that he let me work out there.
Didn't know.
And then, but also too, like looking back, I was so naive. I didn't even think of any of this stuff, which was great. But it was like, there was nothing guaranteed, you know, it wasn't like I signed a walk-on letter or something saying, hey, this spot's going to be available. Like they could have pulled at any time.
Right.
And, you know, and then you tell people like, yeah, I'm going to walk on the spring. They're probably like, dude, you're not even on the team. Like, what are you talking about? You know, they think you're...
I would. That's what I would have thought of.
Yeah, they think you're full of crap, you know? And so it's like that the belief you have to have in yourself and the circle you have to have around you that believe in you. And you experience it too, you know? Like, doing things that other people don't do. Like, you get a lot of crap and criticism and hate for just because the people don't know.
Right.
And so it was like just, you know, I was fortunate. I had a girlfriend at the time, wife now, and my mom and dad, like... I had such a good, close group that were always
makes all the difference in the world in that situation.
Just pouring into me the right way.
Yeah.
And man, it made the difference. And I look back on those times and it's like, I wouldn't have been able to do that without them just because, you know, everyone else is like, dude, just go to school, hang it up.
I had no idea. I had no idea you graduated and then you didn't join the team till a year later. I didn't know that.
And I was playing like intramural like flag football.
That's what I was just wondering. I'm like, so you had, I mean, in order to do what you, I mean, there's some people that get a little bit lucky, which I mean, I think every story has a little bit of luck, but you obviously your work ethic is going to set you up to take advantage of those situations that a lot of people call luck. So like, did you grind absolutely as hard as you could from when you graduated that full year, or what was that like?
Yeah. I was lifting. I was getting up at like 5:30 in the morning and driving out to, it was a family friend, and he played at Wisconsin back in the day. He was like a big power lifter. And so I'd drive out to his gym at like 5:30 in the morning, lift, and we would do like crazy heavyweight, like doing deadlifts and just heavy back squats, like lifting with his power lifter. And then I would drive back.
Speed stuff?
I would drive back. Yeah, I would do some speed stuff. There was this place out in Verona that I would go do speed stuff like once a week.
Oh, yeah, right off 151 out there?
Yeah, it was called...
they had the treadmill, high-speed treadmill.
Yeah, high-speed treadmill.
Was it
One Republic or something Republic?
They had the little like Astro Turbo field turf on half.
Yeah,
I used to train there. I trained there when I had some Canadian football tryouts. I trained there for about 6 months.
Yeah, we did a big treadmill, do speed work and all that. And it was like, it wasn't as many gyms as there are now, the sports performance
stuff.
I'm
a little bit older than you actually, so we probably were working out of there at about the same time.
Yeah, man, yeah. Crazy, yeah. So I was doing that, and then the spring came around, and Wisconsin... So it came through.
I still like when you're in that transitional period, it says a lot about you. When you're in that transitional, and that's why I'm spending so much time on this, but when you're in that transitional period of graduating high school, going to college, not on the team at all. So you don't have the coaches holding you accountable for grades. You don't have the coaches holding you accountable for showing up to class. You don't have the coaches holding you accountable for going to do the workouts.
Yeah.
To have to do that at that point in your life by yourself, that's a testament to you and your work ethic, your mindset and everything. And to be able to then put yourself in a position that spring to obviously start, you know, everything that's kind of happened since then.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I had some breaks along the way, but, man, I was just in my mind, like it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I just believed that was going to happen. And I don't know if it was just, didn't know what I was getting myself into. I didn't know if I was even good enough. Obviously going from a D6 or Division 5, Division 6 high school team where I graduated.
Which in Wisconsin's the smallest, smallest division.
I graduated with less than 100 kids in my graduating class. Like, you know, you didn't play against the best competition, and that's no knock on any of those guys that I played against. Like, they know that.
Yep.
And, you know, so you're going into something that you have no clue if you're even can even step on the field, these guys, you know, and then you get on the field day one, you're like, you know, if you got to have a chance.
How many other guys out there are like you or like Brett Favre? Because Ron Wolf trades a first round draft pick for Brett Favre, and everyone in Wisconsin freaks out back in 91, 92, whenever that happened, whatever it was, because he was kind of unheard of at that point. Right. Yeah. But Ron Wolf believed in him. And, you know, like how many other people just go that like could have been like, but just aren't given the opportunity. You were given the opportunity. Obviously you worked hard for it, but you were given the opportunity to walk on there. How many other people, like, just because they don't have that right belief in them, that maybe could have done that, but just never had the platform or the opportunity? I think about that all the time.
Yeah, I do too. And I see in the NFL too, since I've been in there, there's guys on the practice squad and stuff, and you watch these guys play and you're like, damn, these guys are good, man. It's like, this really good.
The difference from some of the best guys to these practice squad guys and, you know, guys that are free agents. I mean, it's like that. It's that much. It's,
oh yeah. I think the elite guys are obviously they got their
for sure. Yeah.
Their ceiling that they're on. That's, you know, not many guys are touching it, but the other, I would say 90% of the guys are so close. That's just a matter of a guy believing in you, a coach that is willing to stand on the table for you, GM that's willing to trade for you, 100%. Like just having someone to give you an opportunity.
Yep.
And you see it every week, you know, in the NFL, a guy goes down, next man up. And they're like, wow, how they going to do it without this guy?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, this guy's playing a role and he signs a contract extension. Next thing you know, he's played 8-10 years in the NFL just from that one opportunity he got.
Yep. Yep. So you think if you would have gone to Stevens Point, you think it'd be 9 years in the NBA right now?
I definitely would not be in the NBA. I think, the standard mold that you have to have in the NBA is tough. A 6'5" white dude that doesn't have a 40-inch vert. It's tough in the NBA. But they did win the national championship, which would have been my senior year there.
Okay.
And so it probably would have been an awesome experience.
For sure.
And, you know, after playing NFL or playing college basketball, I probably would have been at the same point at some point in my career with real estate or small business stuff, whatever I'm doing. So. Yeah, man, it's been a cool ride. Hopefully I can keep it going. But yeah, man, just the people believing in you is such a big component. And, you know, I look at my story as I got to the NFL, because I went undrafted when I got to Cincinnati. And it was kind of the same thing. Like, I was playing a little bit on offense, and this is the preseason, my first ever preseason game. And so I was playing a little bit of offense, but the way the NFL is set up, like, there's usually 5 or 6 guys, receivers on the roster. And if you're, you know, the first 3 guys are starting, probably, you know, playing every down, then, you know, the 4 or 5 guys are special teams guys, and the 6th guy, like, you're probably inactive, or, you know, you're doing special teams as well. And they had Cincinnati had some good returners and all that stuff. And so when I got there, it was just a basic receiver, but then I would always go up before practice and I'd catch punts. And so the special team coach is out there. And he was a big on, like,
just volunteered yourself to go. Yeah, do that, like, he would be prepared.
He would ask me to come out and catch punts, and so I'd go out there and catch. But I didn't have much experience from college, because you got 105 guys on the roster, like a whole bunch of guys can do it. And so I did a little bit my senior year, but going in Cincinnati, like, the special teams coach was very, like, adamant on, like, you got to do it right. I got to see it before I'm going to put you out there. Like,
for sure,
his job's on the line too by what you do. And so it was the first preseason game. They had a guy that they wanted to be the returner, and he got hurt. And so it's the same old.
This is your rookie year?
My rookie year. First ever preseason game. And so we're playing the Vikings, and it's the 4th quarter. He's like, Al, let's get in there. I wasn't even, like, usually before a preseason game, like, the coach would go through the depth chart, like, hey, you're going to take the 1st and 2nd quarter. This guy's going to take the 3rd quarter. And then everyone just be alive with the 4th quarter, because it just comes a bloodbath with bodies and stuff. And so he's like, Alex, get in there. This is, like, late in the 4th quarter. So I get back there. I'm, you know, I'm nervous. Like, I haven't had much experience. Dude bombs me when I, like, catch over my shoulder. Start so going
you
vertical.
You had to turn and run and catch over.
Yeah, so I turn and run, catch it. And then I, boom, just, like, sandwich, like, in the pile. And then I don't go down. I spin out. And I go, like, 75 yards to the house. And so then next week, it was the same thing. Like, hey, we'll get you one in the 4th quarter. See how you do. So next game comes around, boom, guy pipes one right down the middle, almost score again. Jesus. So then we go the 3rd week, and he's like, all right, let's start. Alex, you're going to start as a punt returner. Like, we'll see what you can do. Same thing, like almost scored again. Like, just had the hot hand.
Yeah.
So then going into the fourth week, they end up cutting the guy that was a returner.
Wow.
And they don't tell you're going to make the team, like, at that moment, because, you know, like, they want to make sure you, you know, you haven't proved anything yet.
Yeah.
And so then, fourth game, I did a little bit of punt returning, and then I remember, you know, after the preseason, they tell you, like, hey, keep your phone on. We're going to do cuts. And I remember I was driving across the bridge. So in Cincinnati, it's right on the Ohio River. And so I was over in Kentucky, living over in Kentucky in the hotel. And so I was going to see my family because they were in town after the last preseason game. So I get in the car and I'm driving across the bridge and phone starts ringing. Look down, it says Marvin Lewis, his coach in the Bengals at the time. I was like, shit. And so he calls me. I was like, what's up, coach? He's like, hey, I just want to let you know you made the team. So, like, go enjoy this moment, like, with your family. Yeah. Like, you've earned it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so grateful for that. Like, I still remember that phone call like it was yesterday. And I was so grateful that he called me. I wasn't sitting in my hotel room, you know, just on edge the whole time. But, yeah, so that was how I made the team.
So, and three plays your rookie year, right? All the work that you do, again, you know, through high school, college, everything that you do kind of sets you up. And you set yourself up when you give an opportunity, those three punt returns in the preseason likely have been the springboard that's gotten you 9 years.
Yeah.
If those three plays in the preseason don't happen, you might be cut and maybe never play in the NFL again, right? Yeah,
no, for sure. And I think the way the practice squads were set up back in the day, like, they didn't have as many spots. Yeah. It wasn't as
five
much,
or something, right?
Yeah, six, well, it was seven? Like 12 when I got there. But it wasn't as much, like, fluctuation as it has now. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just like you said, you know, you call it luck, you call it just like season opportunity, whatever you want to call it. Like they said, all that work goes into a rep that you may or may not get.
Right.
But it's like, for me, I was like, you know, some people go about life like, I might not even work out. And it's like, man, I tell you one thing, if you don't do the work, you're never going to get an opportunity.
Definitely not.
And so you're going to, what's work? And we may or may not get the opportunity. But when we do get the opportunity, like, we're not surprised by it. We're not like, in over our head when we get the opportunity. It's just, you know, you've done the work to earn that, right?
Yeah.
And now just go seize it.
Plus, if you work and then you don't, it doesn't. Plus, if you do the work for that thing and that thing doesn't work out, at least now you've put in the work. So now you know what it's like to put in the work for the next thing too.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Because that's the piece that can roll over.
Yeah, exactly. And whether it's sports or real estate, like, how many times you do due diligence on a deal, right? You get all the way up to the table and then it falls through.
Like, I got one right now. I got 100 grand out that might bye-bye, 100 grand potentially, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, we're in it and, you know, there's a piece that I don't like right now that I'm like ready to walk away from the deal. So yeah, it happens for sure.
But like your work wouldn't have changed if you would have known that was going to fall through or not.
No.
Like you prepare to, and you go about it no matter what's going to happen.
100%.
Because at the end of the day, I always say it's like 100%. Something good was going to come from this, whether I made the NFL or not. Like, putting myself out there and giving everything I had when people were doubting me and people were saying, oh, there's no way you're going to be able to play 100%. In the NFL. And like, whatever, there's always going to be naysayers. And it wasn't like I was listening to that, but you still feel it. And I was still, even if it didn't work out, I was like, man, at least I didn't sit there and say, I shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Right.
Like, I always, my dad and I always talk and we always have the same discussion. It's like, Jay, just no regrets, right? Yeah. Just no regrets. Whatever happens, no regrets. Like, you gave it everything you had. There's nothing you can do more as a player. There's nothing you do more as a person to achieve what you've achieved. Just lay it all out there. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you know, that mindset and that growth mindset that you have will fuel you to a second career that you'll be successful at.
How long were you walk on before scholarship?
2 years.
2 years walk on.
Yeah.
Then your school started getting paid for.
Yeah. That was a cool moment too. I remember Coach Anderson at the time, and I was playing quite a bit. And it was in the off season, the spring, and, you know, we're in the team meeting room and it wasn't much social media as there is now.
Yeah,
so you didn't see the stuff, which was cool. You know, it was just like, it was more internal and more intimate. And I just remember he's like, oh, this guy's done a great job. And you're just like sitting there in the meeting, you know, as a college kid, you're like, all right, what's he going to say now? And he's like, we're getting this kid a scholarship. And then he says your name. And you're like,
That's sweet.
Let's go. And everyone goes crazy. Yeah. It's just like, those are the moments that are cool. It's like when your peers and the guys that you go to battle with are happy for you.
Yeah.
Like those are the moments that are cool because they know the work you put in and in the bonds that you form.
Yep.
And you obviously play college football. You know, like there's days that are hard out there in the field.
Sure.
And like there's no greater compliment than getting an attaboy from your
100%
with the players you play with.
Yeah.
you know, it's cool to come from a coach and all that and fans, but when it's coming from someone that you're out there with, like that's, those are the ones you look forward to.
So, you know, it's kind of obviously your sports background and kind of where you're, you know, where you're at now. What do you think it's going to take to be able to, like I kind of led off with, you know, bundle all this up and now transition it into whatever's next after football. And now hopefully, you know, like you're talking about, you might have some tryouts and stuff coming up, whatever. And so hopefully you still squeeze some more, you know, time out of this. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, whatever, however more many years and how many more opportunities you get.
I'm getting old.
But obviously you're getting closer. You know, you're on the back now. You're getting closer to being done than you are, you know, with what you've got. You know, you've got less time than you do more time playing. So what do you think is going to be key for you to be able to box all this up and then take it on to the next endeavor of life?
Yeah, this offseason has been the longest I've been a free agent, so I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. And obviously, you got bills to pay, you got family relying on you in that aspect. But I was just thinking at it like holistically, like, you know, what am I going to do, like, with all my time and effort, and you know, what am I going to focus on? And I still think one of the things that's going to help me have the most success is like, just like putting myself out there. Like you're not an expert anymore in your field, right? When you're done playing football, like you're not an expert in real estate. You're not an expert in small business or operating a property, whatever you're going to
get a lot less reps over there.
Yeah. A lot less reps, right. You know? And, and so then you're jumping into a pool where guys have a lot of experience. Guys know what they're doing over you. And so kind of putting yourself out there and be willing to learn and being, having that humble and like humbleness and like letting the ego go of like, hey, you're not the best anymore.
For sure.
But it doesn't mean you can't get there, 100%. But it's going to take time and you got to put in the work just like you've done everything else. 100%. And so for me, it's like, how can I meet with as many people and sit down with as many people that are doing it at a high level and emulate what they're doing and do some of the things they're doing. And I mean, that's just the best way to learn. I know you do it a lot too, is like you can relate so many things to football or sports, whatever it is. And you know, I think about when I got to Wisconsin, who was the best receiver there? It was Jared Aberderis. So what am I doing? I'm watching Jared the whole time. And like, there's no better person to learn from than the best that is right in front of you, you know? And so I think it's the same thing with whatever profession you go into. Like, why not sit down and learn from the best of the best? Yep. And that learning curve can grow so much. And obviously you got to get out and do it yourself too. And, you know, learn through trial and error.
It helps compress time.
Yeah,
right?
for sure.
And I talk a lot about compressing time because I just turned 35 a couple days ago, and you know, a lot of people are like, "Well, you're only 35, and you've done this, and this." I'm like, "Well, I'm not. I'm working my tail off. I did the same thing. I was looking at other people and watching other people doing what you know and learning from them, right? And I was able to eliminate, I think, a lot of mistakes early on because of that, right? Which helps compress time because I can have success faster, right? Yep. Then also the work ethic and not procrastinating. I mean, I talk all the time about, you know, there's some people out there that will hem and haw and it takes them 6 weeks to make a decision on something when I just make that, I get it off my desk in 10 seconds, right? Yep. I make the decision because what I've come to realize is you don't actually need to have 100% of the information to make a decision. There's a lot of times I'll make a decision where I've got maybe 50 to 75% of the information and I'm like, well, that's good enough. I don't need any more. Because the other thing too is like, there's, you know, 99.9% of decisions that we make, you know, and choices that we have, 99% of them are not gonna, if you make the wrong decision, 99% of them aren't gonna blow your life up or completely ruin your life.
Yeah.
And I think there's so many people that overvalue some of the decision, like puts too much value on each decision, every decision that comes across their desk, like it's a life or death moment. And a lot of times it's not. So like there'll be times I'm wrong 6 times and then I can find the seventh, I can make the seventh like adjustment and now I'm right and moving on.
Yeah.
And I've done that in a matter of maybe a week or 2 weeks or whatever. And the other person is still at that first initial like fork in the road, trying to make a decision on what to do 6 weeks, 2 months, you know, 5 months, 8 months later. Yep. Right. And so if you do that with decision or choice after choice that comes across, you know, your desk and you look at, you know, I've been doing this for 13 or whatever years, 12, 13 years now, that compresses a lot of time.
Oh, it does. Yeah. And I think of, you know, going back to the football analogy, like, you know, sometimes, especially when we're doing like heavy installs during training camp, it's like, you don't get to walk through every play. You don't get to even see a clip on every play. And so you get out there and you hear the play and you just go run it. And, you know, sometimes you mess it up.
Yep.
But the ones you mess up, you don't forget.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I think of
especially when you hear some choice words from somebody.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, coach would always say, like, hey, if you're going to make a mistake, just make it full speed.
Yeah.
And
Aaron Rodgers ever just light into you for messing up?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't play with Aaron that long. But yeah, man, he was one of those guys that you didn't want to mess up because you knew the standard that was set. But I think about what you're just talking about, the just make a decision, go with it, and we'll figure it out from there.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're making reckless decisions. Obviously, you're within a parameter that you feel safe with doing and calculated, but it's like just make a decision to go
100%.
And we'll figure it out as we move on.
And then to not be just, you know, you also have to admit, okay, I was wrong here. But man, it's fine. So move on to the next, move on. Like now fix it. Correct. I'm wrong. I think I'm wrong a lot. Like I'm wrong a lot, but you know, again, by just pushing all those things forward, I'm able to fix a lot of the things, or our team is able to fix a lot of things, you know, and we move on and figure it out. But I think that's a big thing. And, but I mean, do you think, you know, obviously ESPN or whatever had this whole thing on that whole show. I know Andre Rison's on it a lot, where of athletes blowing their money and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, since some of the light has been shed on athletes maybe not historically not being good with their money, do you get a sense that maybe some of that's starting to change now and newer guys that are getting some of their newer money in the NFL are being a little bit wiser or not? Is it still kind of the same old thing, do you think?
Yeah, I think guys are getting wiser. There's still a lot of fancy cars in the parking lot.
For sure.
And I think, you know, there's still a long way to go. But I think the NFLPA, the union that we're in, they do a good job of they vet all the agents. And, you know, the agents got to submit all their stuff to the PA. And, you know, their accountants and everything look at everything. So there is some control that way. But, yeah, I mean, guys are getting fat lump sums of money and don't know what to do with it. And so they go buy stuff rather than buying actual assets that make them money.
Yeah.
Or investing it with someone that knows something about investing. And so, yeah, there's still a lot of money being wasted, but I think guys are being smarter about it. And I think, you know, that's a testament to the guys that did fail and like being open enough to share that, you know, how they failed. And, you know, sometimes it's not their choice. It just gets released. But I think, you know, when you're able to share that with NFL guys, and because it is, you think about it, like, and people will be like, how could you lose $30 million? And like, we talked about it, the taxes and all that. But it's like, some of these guys grew up with no money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so they have no value for money. If it comes in, it goes out, you know, and it's easy for someone that grew up in a stable home that, you know, the parents were there and saying, you know, giving them advice and, you know, they saw how, you know, working and paying the bills and all that stuff. But when you come from somewhere that it's not like that, like it's easy to judge or not in those shoes.
For sure.
And so that was always eye open to me that some of these guys, you know, they don't know what to do with their money because there was no example set for them. You know, they have bad people in their corner that are giving advice on investments. You know, and they're
people
just
come out of the woodwork.
People come out of the woodwork that they'd never seen before, and you know, they think they owe them something, and so there's a lot of things that go into every situation. But I think guys are getting smarter, and you know, it's just like if you got that much money, if you're able to put it to work when you're early in your career, like when you're done after 10 years or 8 years or 7 years, whatever how long you play, like you won't ever have to work again if you don't want to,
right?
Because it's producing the cash flow, it's producing money for you. It's, you know, it's the power of investment and time value of money and putting it to work early.
Yep. Well, that's why, I mean, I, you know, with that pro player circle, I just started to get athletes that were following me and whatnot. And I think it's cool to be able to help, you know, like with some of you, you know, there's probably, I don't know, 12 to 15, most of them NFL guys and some of the guys MLS, but, just to be able to try to, you know, help. And I mean, it's cool. Like the group I'm around, it seems like they're somewhat already educated because that's what they're seeking, which is really cool, you know, to be able to see that. But yeah, you know, obviously would love to be able to help you and stuff too. And
yeah,
you know,
there's some cool organizations starting up that, because the NFL has a lot of good benefit stuff and they have like tuition and reimbursement and stuff. And so now there's some organizations that are doing these like boot camps for a 3-4 day boot camp, and the money, you can use that reimbursement money to pay for it.
Gotcha.
And you go down and it's like, you know, a small business, whether it's like financial advising, real estate, yeah. and it's like smaller groups, you're actually going out looking at investment properties.
Gotcha.
You're sitting down with CEOs and actually being able to learn and all that stuff. Cause I think a lot of guys have their guard up cause they hear the horror stories of guys getting ripped off. And so when people come with a good investment, everyone's like, you know, a little hesitant because it's like, is this guy trying to steal my money or 100%. Not? And so
you have to,
and it's, so it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It's like, yeah, you got to find people you trust, but also you don't want to give their money. So then some guys don't just park their money.
For sure.
And you know,
which there's nothing wrong with park at that. At
the, if you got that much, if you got that much, this, you know, it's fine.
It's all right to park it until you know for sure too. Right. Which is what I was kind of telling you before is like, look, you also don't have to be in a rush. Right. I mean, you know, the cool thing about your situation is like you said, you've made good money the last 9 years, playing the NFL. Hopefully you get a handful more checks yet. And you know, the cool thing is you also don't have to be in a rush. Right. And you got two or three kids, right?
I got four
kids. Jesus. Yeah. Four kids. So I got a 4 month old, I got, you know, 11 year old. And so I'm coaching 12-year soccer.
Man.
By the way, a week and a half ago, I get way too into the 12-year girls soccer.
Love that.
As a coach.
Love that.
My Fitbit, my max heart rate when I'm working out is like 192. That's like my max, absolute max, like on the bike or something, just pushing it, right? Well, I went an hour and a half. So this is also just counting warm-ups. Like warm-ups and then the game, my heart rate averaged 155 beats a minute. And I burned like 1,300 calories. this was 10 days ago.
Guys get cardio with the 12-year soccer.
I'm just like into it. So it's all positive stuff. But again, I think I'm so into that because it's not even just coaching the soccer for them. It's, again, I know what that taught me and what that led into. So when I'm actually coaching the girls and like I'm holding them accountable to something or I'm getting after them a little bit, I'm also trying to relate everything that I do to them. And, you know, everything that I say to them, if I get, you know, upset, I'll say, hey, why did I just get upset with you right there? Well, you just told me this, this, and this, right? And I said, exactly, right? And like, I want them to also like, so one thing, for example, is like, you gotta be respectful, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, we have different core values and stuff that you gotta, well, cause again, it's not just for sports. I view it as I'm also coaching them to set them up for their life as well. And I talk all the time about like what I've been able to accomplish. And again, they're like 11 years old. So I don't go into like crazy details of what I do. Like they don't know that I'm in business necessarily or whatever, but I just try to really stress like, guys, these core values have allowed me to like, have any of you had someone tell you you can't do something, they'll like raise their hand. I'm like, how does that make you feel? I'm like, well, it sucks. It's stupid. I'm like, do you believe them? They're like, yeah, I start to believe them. I'm like, you can't. Right. So like we have different conversations about this at, you know, as 11 year olds. And I hope that that just makes more of an impact. So I think that's also why I'm invested. Yes, I'm competitive as hell and I want to win. I want to win our league at 12U soccer. But I also just, again, I know what sports has done for me and so many other people out there. And if it can be that foundation that teaches you to work, that teaches you how to, you know, take some adversity and be able to pick yourself up, dust yourself off at an early age, you know, winning should be important, you know, at that age, even like you should learn how to win. You should learn that winning's important. And so, you know, I don't know. I think that's part of the reason I get so into soccer. But I mean, anyways, you got four kids. So, I mean, like you have some opportunities there. And I mean, that's one thing, too, is like, find time to be able to spend time with your kids too.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the financial freedom aspect that we all want. You know, it's like, I don't want to have to go to my employer and be like, hey, I need to dip out. And they're like, no, you got to stay here. And it's like, you know, you're like, I'm a grown man. You know,
but coach your kids.
Yeah, spend time coach with my kids. My dad was always a coach. And yeah, look, you're saying that the lessons you learn from sports is just so powerful. And it's never too early to start instilling that with kids. And I remember my dad was very disciplined man, like still works his tail off today, you know, and he would push us, you know, and coach us hard, but not like, you know, not belittling us, you know, it was always coming from a positive light. And, you know, me and my buddy still talk about it today, like the impact he had on us as all of us kids. And like, we still talk about those stories, you know, and it's like those are impressions that you're making on a young mind.
Yep.
And it can go the other way too.
Yep.
And you see that with sports a lot, and it's a dark side of youth sports. And so that's 100%. Great that you're doing that, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I love it. I enjoy it. So when you've already done some investing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're investing in some different businesses, some real estate.
Yeah.
You know, you've gotten in a project or two with us or whatever.
Yep.
How, like what do you feel like you've learned so far through that whole process? What have you struggled with? What has maybe not worked out the way you thought it would work out? Or what are some headaches? Or what's that whole process kind of been like? You're learning, and, you know, have you ever felt like you've been burnt by the oven, right? Or, yeah, you know, I guess what has that kind of initially been like for you throughout this process?
Yeah, I'm a pretty conservative person when it comes to investing. And so I've been doing well with my investments. Obviously haven't been going crazy with them. You know, I've done it, you know, I got two other partners that I've done a lot of my stuff with. And then, you know, I've done one of your deals before, and a couple other, you know, small things that I've done. But I've learned a lot, man. I learned like two sides. I learned the side of an investor. So then when I'm done, like, you know, you're always hearing the pitches and hearing, you know, getting the docs, mm-hmm, documents and all that stuff. And like, what gets you excited as an investor from a return standpoint, and like how they communicate. And, you know, one thing I really respect about you is you've been open with us, when we're doing those pro circle stuff. And then, you know, I invest in one of your deals and the deal's done everything you said it's supposed to do.
Yeah. Good. And I'm glad you're in one of the good ones. We got two crappy ones right now. Like, which one are you in? Fund 7 or fund 8?
7, I think.
7? Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. It's done exactly what you said it was going to do, you know? And, you know, obviously they're not all going to be like that, like that open communication that you have, with investors, like that's something that, you know, hopefully someday I get investors in some of my projects, and, you know, that's something that I've taken little pieces of everything that everyone's done. And, you know, having people you can trust is a huge thing. And I think from a player standpoint, I didn't have the time to run a deal. I didn't have time to, and you could buy a little small stuff, but then you're still always relying on someone else, you know, obviously you get a property manager and all that, but you know, sometimes the numbers are just, you got to do it yourself if you want the numbers to work. But I think having people you trust has been the biggest thing that I've done.
Yeah.
You know, having people that you can give money to and you could trust them watching your kids, you know, like those are the people that you trust invest with. And it just takes so much out of it. You know, you're not worrying about, is this guy trying to screw me over? Is this guy trying to take me for my money? It's just like that peace that you have with investing with people you trust.
So do you see yourself going forward more like as an operator or more of like allocating your money, or both? Like, obviously both could be an option.
Yeah, I think I'll allocate some money still in other people's projects, but I'd like to operate my own deals, buy my own deals. And, you know, and I've just kind of been brainstorming this stuff as I've started to slow down my football career. And it's like, I'd like to operate deals. I'd like to get a portfolio that, you know, I don't need to own the most doors in town. Like, that's not how I want to operate. I want to, but that, you know, that could all change too, you know, when you start doing it, you're like, man, this is, we could really take this, you know? And so from that standpoint, it's like, just trying to find my niche and find what I want to do with real estate. And, you know, like I said, I have a couple small business stuff that I invested in, you know, maybe something that comes up. I don't know. There's so many ways to go. It's just a matter of finding my focus and attacking something, and obviously being able to pivot from that, whatever comes up. But yeah, just finding my niche and focusing there and see where it goes.
Yeah. Jeff is he still playing in Washington?
Yeah, he's with the Commanders.
See, because he's got that deal. I mean, I know he's putting stuff together with his group. It seems like they got a deal. I know I got to get back to him on it. I know he shot me an email. So it's cool, like, to see him. Like, again, he's still on a roster right now as a backup quarterback, and he's still putting like some of this stuff together, which I'm like, man,
he's got a really cool story, man. Like, we did a couple of real estate things together, and he kind of pivoted. He still does real estate, but he pivoted more to the small business world, and him and his brother partnered up. And, you know, I'm sure he'll get on the podcast at some point, so I don't want to share his whole story, but yeah, man, he put in a lot of work and did a lot of research himself. And I mean, you know, it is, you got to get in the books, you got to listen to the podcast, and you got to get out there and start doing it. And him and his brother, it's pretty cool what they're doing with the Four Pillars group and, you know, trying to buy up small businesses and find good operators and really just do things the right way. And, you know, everybody wins.
Yep. 100%. Cool, man. Well, yeah, I don't know. Do you have any questions or thoughts to add?
You just brought up books. What are some of the key books that you read kind of that like triggered that thought process of, oh, I need more than just NFL career. Now what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what changed your thought process?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's read this book, but the Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yeah.
Because I know we've had these discussions a lot, and like so much of it is about mindset and not being afraid to learn something new. And so I read Justin's book. It's a great book. And, you know, hearing, being able to, for me, it was like, all right, I got no problem like talking to people and reaching out to people. For me, it's like, how can I get stronger with the fundamentals of like the financing and all that stuff? That way I can, you know, if I get a deal sent to me, at least I can like do the back of the napkin and like, don't waste my time with this, or like, hey, let's take this thing to the next step. And so, you know, whether it's podcast, for the small business stuff, you know, I listened to this podcast called Acquiring Minds, and it's like, it's literally just guys getting on there and sharing how they acquired a business and how they're operating the business. And like literally just like sharing their story of how they do it. There's no like sales pitch. There's no nothing. It's just, here's a business I bought here. And they share the numbers, they share everything down to the debt, to how much net worth they had to put into the deal. Cause you know, it's everyone wants to go, how much money I got to put in, how much money am I putting in, you know? And like, yeah. And sometimes you never get that answer when you listen to some of the stuff.
Yeah.
So I really like the transparency of that podcast. And
there's so many times my bank account's gone to zero, no matter how much has been in it. And I'm like, oh man. But I mean, it's part of, sometimes it's by, you know, you're just barely able to make a deal happen because of your financial situation or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's,
and it takes a lot of guts.
Yeah.
You know, and, but it takes also too, like, believing in the vision you have.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I know this thing's going to go. So let's scrape when we got to scrape. And then in 5-10 years, we'll be able to, you'd be able to coach soccer all day long if you want to.
100%. When'd you pick up Rich Dad Poor Dad? How many years ago was that?
Oh man, that was a while ago. That was before I even got into real estate. And I think the, you know, there's tons of locker room talk about like real estate. Like it's kind of the cliche thing in the NFL. I go, let me guess, you're doing real estate. Like, yeah, guys are doing real estate, but some guys don't know real estate. They just give their money to an operator,
yeah.
and which is fine. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Which is a great way to do it if you don't, yep. if you got money and you don't know what to do with it.
And I always tell people, what I would tell, if I was in a locker room, and I mean, I've told this to a lot of the guys that I, you know, work with, Chris Wormley and Jeff, and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, advice to you is, you know, ideally, you do start to understand how it works, at least from a high level, right? Ideally, you know, if you're in that situation where, you know, again, being an NFL or pro athlete, and then just like anyone else, you're somewhat of a target. Ideally, you pick a couple of different operators as well. So that way you're spreading, yeah. You know, it's not only just like the type of industry, but like operators, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, so that way, at least if one person screws you over, at least it's only maybe like 1/5 of you. It's not the entire thing where it's like you hear some of those nightmare stories, whether again, it's pro athletes or it doesn't even have to be pro athletes, just anyone that came across money. It could be won a lottery, whatever. You know, a lot of times when they just went to one source, that's, you know, I mean, everyone that even invests with us, like I tell, now not everyone listens with me, to me, and I'm like the only person that they got, but I tell people all the time, like you should consider to be working with 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 different operators. Cause that way, at least you're spreading out your risk of, yep. if someone's going to steal money, at least they're capped with how much that they can steal, or, you know, have projects go south, or, you know, whatever. Right.
Yeah. The locker room is a cool place. Cause it's like, everyone's sharing ideas and, you know, and I've gotten pitched stuff in the locker room before, and you're like, dude, I don't know where you got that from, but, you know, and sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, you know, guys are looking for stuff to invest yep. in, and they're just looking for someone they trust. And,
for sure.
you know, even, you know, the small stuff I've done, you know, I've had tons of guys be like, hey, let me know next time you got something.
Yeah.
Like, I want, because they see the way you carry yourself. They feel like they can trust you. And,
yep.
And so, yeah, if there is, you know, a chance to raise capital, like, you know, those are guys 100%. You go back to, and, you know, hopefully you know what you're doing, and you do it the right way, and 100%. you take care of the investors and they take care of you, and,
yeah.
you know, you just keep growing together.
So when you picked up the book, were you already in the NFL or were you still in college?
Yeah, I was in the NFL. I was, like I said, I did most of my stuff through like just a financial advisor, yeah. mutual fund stuff. I wasn't into real estate.
So maybe like 2018 you picked up the book?
Yeah, probably 2018. That's right. 2017, 2018. Yeah.
You picked up Rich Dad Poor Dad?
Yeah.
Prior to that, so that was like the first book you kind of read on business stuff, and or
that was like the first one that I've like really started like, hey, let's start thinking about this more, and more from you have control over it, like you can do yeah. it, but learn and rather just like, hey, here's $1 million. Sure. Can you invest this for me? Like, and for me, it was like, I always wanted to, every investment I did, I always wanted to learn something from the investment. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great to give money, but even like for you, like you taught us so much stuff and it was like, you didn't have to do that. We could just give your money and you never asked for it. But, like I always wanted to learn something from every deal I've done. Mm-hmm. And even the small business deal I've done, we bought this, like it's large format graphics. So like, you know, if you want vinyl on the wall or we do vehicle wraps and, you know, signage and like just a very like boring business. Yeah. When you,
some of the boring ones are some of the best ones.
Oh dude. And like this thing's like doing so well. And obviously there's a good operator there. One of my really good friends and, you know, people always say don't mix business and friendships and yeah, they could go south, but I was like, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with someone I trust and know.
Yeah.
And, but even like this business, you know, I was kind of a fly on the wall at first and, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And then it's like, you look back, you're like, oh man, this was the stuff we were going through. Now I'm like starting to actually understand it
and see it.
And now you go back and like go back over it again. Yeah. You're like, now it's really starting to make sense. Yeah. Really starting to make sense. And you kind of keep doing that as you learn more, you go back and then you learn more.
Yeah. Well, the deal you're doing, you're in with us, we're going through a refinance there right now. And then we'll be probably putting another like million. Once a refinance comes out, we'll probably refinance like 3 million or so out. So you guys will get some of that back, but we'll withhold probably 700 to 1.5 of it to put back into the properties.
Yeah.
So I know at some point with our director of facilities, I'll be taking a ride out to those properties. Maybe you can come along too.
Yeah,
and that'd be a good learning opportunity just to, you can go look at those with us and, you know, whatnot, but be a fly on the wall there. What'd you go to school for?
I went for business management.
Okay. So you had some business background there.
Yeah.
So then what was it that actually made you like pick up the book Rich Dad Poor Dad though? Cause obviously there's like a four year, five year time gap, you know, 3 to 5 year time gap in between, you know, you getting a business degree and, you know, going to school for business and picking that book up. What was it that you were feeling that made you pick that up or look for that?
I had some really good, teammates that were sharing a lot of like the business stuff they were doing. They're doing some franchising stuff and, other guys are doing real estate stuff and investing in businesses. And it was like the cash flow component. And it's like, you know, thinking about it, you're making X amount of dollars when you're playing and then boom, it stops. You don't get another check from the league.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then you get your pension and all that stuff, but that's, you know, 55, 65, whatever you want to pull it. So that's a long time of like no cash.
Yep.
And so I was like, if I could, obviously I'm going to do something with my time, even if I made $100 million, well, it's easy to say that because I didn't make $100 million.
If I made $100 million, I'd still be here tomorrow.
Right. Like, yeah, I probably wouldn't be grinding like I did if I didn't make any money, but it's like, I'm going to do something with my time. Like I just, the way I'm wired, like I got to focus on something. And so, yeah, I'll be compensated for my time that I'm doing, but it's like, how can I get stuff that's producing cash flow that when I am done playing, that blow of no money coming in from the league is way less.
So you were able to think about that back 2017, 2018. So your third, fourth year.
It was after. So we bought that. We bought that business in. We bought that business in 2019. So we're coming up 5 years. But when we started buying that business, and you know, you start seeing some of the numbers and like the cash flow it's producing, and you know, and then you start getting dividends, and you're like, well, man, I got to. How do I keep replicating that, you know, and diversifying and doing different things.
Yep.
And so that way, like I was saying, the cash flow is coming in that I go from making whatever I was making to, I'm not making that, but at least I got all my expenses paid for, my day-to-day family expenses paid for. 100%. Now I can take my time and find something I want to do, whether it's another investment property or whatever it may be. And I'm not worried about, I got to make this money work or else I'm not going to be able to pay my mortgage and take care of my family.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of where all that stemmed from, and just been a long process.
So did you said that, okay, I started to think about, you know, future and, you know, but what was there something else that made you think about that? Did you see another guy that struggled after the transition? Was there anything else that kind of just like made you really get into that? Like to even have that thought process of, okay, this is going to be done sometime. Like, did a guy get cut or
I had some teammates and buddies that were getting cut. And they ended up they've been going places and some are still playing today. So it wasn't like the end of their careers, But you don't know that when you get cut. I remember the first time I got cut, you're like, oh shit, like I'm out right now.
So it opens your eyes a little bit.
And obviously the phone rings soon when you've had a track record and all that, but your mind goes to the worst thing possible. Like, dude, I'm done. Like, and I don't have enough coming in to feel comfortable.
You know what you got in your bank right now from what you've already made, but you're like, okay, how long is this going to last me?
Yeah. If I don't put and it like, to work, I don't never, know what I'm going to do with my money. I don't even always think about it from a money, like just like worrying about money. Like I'm not worried about money, but at the same time, I'm worried about money. Like,
how can I worry about money?
You know, like
every day I'm looking at my accounts. I know I'm worried about all the time.
Yeah, you know exactly, but you're not making decisions based on worrying about money. You're just like, how can I set myself up to be able to do the things we talked about, like the financial freedom and I mean, at work. I'm like, I'm not scared to work, but if I can be smart and invest things in the right way and have cash flow coming in and be able to do the things I want to do when I want to do them, how I want to do them, because I have that freedom, then that sounds pretty damn good to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Joel. On that, what are some of those kind of goals long-term that you're looking at now? Obviously, you're looking at some real estate stuff. You're already doing some real estate stuff. You want to get more into that from an operator standpoint. You've got some businesses that you've acquired. Looking longer term, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, I know a lot of people in our game don't. The concept of retirement doesn't really, it's not a thing.
Yeah.
You know, you just want to keep going with something all the time and kind of form your life in a way that you just love what you do every day. And so you're not worried about retirement so much, but what are some of those goals for you? That's kind of the 5 years from now, it'd be great to be at this point, either financially or from a stability standpoint or a cash flow standpoint. Do you have anything that's like super just has your wheels turning, or is it more of a focused on football and then we'll kind of start putting feelers out and see where we go?
Yeah. I've kind of been this offseason. I've kind of been in, I don't want to say a tough spot, cause I've been fortunate to be able to do this, and, but it's been tough for me because it's just been different. And I think so I'm still training and staying ready for a call. And I've had, I had six workouts with six NFL teams over 6 weeks and didn't get signed. And so it's like encouragement, discouraging at the same time. Like, your name's still out there. There's still people are still know who you are and are looking to sign you, but no one signed you yet. And so you're like, that runway is getting shorter and shorter. And in terms of like a sheer number, man, I know how much money I want to make in the immediate time just to be able to have all my bills paid. And so we're working on that right now. But then obviously, I think as, you know, Justin's alluded to, like guys that are achievers and try to do big things, like I don't think it's realistic to say, hey, let's just make 200 grand a year, 400 grand a year, 500 grand a year. Like, cause I don't think you're not going to hit that number and be like, yep, I'm done.
Right.
You know, you're just going to keep going. Like you were talking about. And so I never picked a number. I know what number that I need to, like, just for base stuff, and then everything else gravy. And, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, where do I go? Where do I put my focus? And I have an idea. And so it's just a matter of fine tuning that and going after it.
I think if I were you, I'd pick a number.
Pick a number?
Yeah. And even if it is that first number of, and then shoot beyond that number, you know, I mean, Grant Cardone, I don't know if you've read any of his stuff.
Oh, yeah. I read 10X.
That book changed my life a lot. I mean, so like if you've got your number of, okay, this is what the monthly, you know, this is what it takes to take care of my family. This is, you know, our lifestyle right now, whatever. And that's my number. Take that number, literally multiply it by 10, shoot for that.
Yeah.
I've always done that. And it's really helped. And a lot of times
you think from just a mindset standpoint of
it keeps me focused on what I need to have happen. Right. So, I liked how you said earlier, you're like, I don't need to have an X number of doors. And I agree with that. Like, I used to be really fixated on that, and I'll still put that out on social media because it just grabs more eyeballs.
Yeah.
But it's to me, it's less about the doors as it is about the actual cash flow that's coming in my pocket. Cause that's what can actually impact my life, my family's life, the future generation's life.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but the cool thing is if you actually have that target and then 10X it, then what you're going to start to do is you'll also start to be able to like pick and choose kind of opportunities based on that too. Right. I mean, it's, which again, like, so for example, like might you pass on a smaller deal? And again, maybe it's a little bit different where you're at right now, cause you might want the smaller deal, cause it could be a great learning experience.
Yeah.
But at some point you might be like, okay, I'm going to pass on a smaller deal just because it's not as efficient to buy that small of a deal. And so now maybe you hone in on what your actual target should be of acquisition or whatever, yeah. Right? Now that you're honed in on what the actual target is, to me, I feel like just more success comes out of that. So I've always set targets.
Have you seen when you set a number? I'm sure early on, did you ever like set a number and now you look back at the number, you're like, wow, yeah, that was yeah. such a small
I've
number.
I've never actually achieved my target because before I even get it, I readjust it back out.
Gotcha.
So I've never actually
When you start knocking on the door, you move the yeah. finish line farther.
Yeah. Out. Because like if you take the number that it takes for you that you have in mind right now, you 10x that number and you start to achieve that, go towards that number, you're going to usually you'll be like, okay, how can I adjust that number?
Yeah. Right. And so many guys say that too. And like, it's gotta be true.
Yeah.
You know, like the, yeah. just,
and then against the purpose of it, right? I mean, it's the purpose, like why is that number, you know, impactful, right? I mean, that's also important too, because if you have a purpose behind it, that's going to obviously keep you driving too. And I mean, I try to also
you're doing tell the people, work anyway, so
I try to tell people, and you should also be doing this, like again, like when you're done, it should also be for your health and wellness as well. When you're done playing football, like to keep that a priority, like it should be towards family. Like you should have these different targets of these different areas, of all different areas, not just money, right? Because I do know a lot of people that have had a lot of success with money, but that's all they've got.
Yeah.
And then the problem is now actually like it wasn't actually just all the money that they wanted, because now they're missing all these other things. Yeah. They're actually more miserable now. So it's, and I mean, the thing too is like when you've got, you know, spiritual, you know, health and wellness, family, money, you know, and whatever buckets that you've got for yourself, there's always going to be times where one bucket gets sacrificed for another. It's rare that they all grow
yeah.
together. Like right now, the last 3 weeks, I've been horrible, like working out. I did something to my neck, been going to my buddy's, a chiropractor. And like my workouts have been non-existent for 3 weeks.
Almost 35,
like,
bro.
Yeah, I know. And I'm like feeling it. And so like right now my workouts are like non-existent, but like we've got a ton of deals lined up. Right. And so like nothing, like I try to be consistent as possible in all areas of life and make zero excuses, but there are times like when you are focused on achieving a target that other things are going to sacrifice for a little while. I mean, you're never, in my opinion, like people are always like work-life balance. I'm like, you're never going to actually achieve balance unless you really go, you know, crazy enough in those areas for long enough. And now you can somehow find, but like for me, like when I'm, it's kind of weird. Like I've tried to like go after this whole balance thing in the past and it's been a long time, but like I feel shitty when I do it.
Yeah.
Cause I just, I feel like maybe cause I'm trying to go for balance, then maybe I'm not
falling short.
I'm falling short, maybe all the way across the board at that point then. So like instead of balance, I mean, something that, you know, I talk about all the time and, you know, with my family and whatnot is, you know, work life integration. And I mean, we integrate stuff, like, you know, I mean, if we're going on a trip, like I'm still probably going to be working right now. There's times I'll just leave my cell phone and not do it. Like when we went to Nantucket, you know, last 2 months ago, there were certain times I just left my phone, didn't even look at it. But there was times that, you know, two or three times that trip, I worked from 6 a.m. to 11 on my computer at the hotel. Right. Yeah. So like, you know, you just do what needs to be done when it needs to be done. But yet, you know, you got to have your priorities too.
And how about this? I got a question for you about real estate. I don't know how much time you got, but it's kind of a complete 180. You're talking about you got deals right now. And from like a deal flow perspective, when you were first starting out, I know we talked about like the prospecting of like, you know, getting the white pages, going on the thing and looking up the property owners and, you know, cold calling them and all that stuff. And that's how you found some deals early on.
Yeah. I still find them that way.
You're still doing that today.
Still find them that way. Yeah. I mean, I still find them. You know, I mean, so there's a 48 unit that we're going to close on next week. It's like a $5 million deal, which is a tiny deal for us now, but it's one of those deals that basically it's just going to be family. There's not anyone else buying it, or buying in really, other than we kind of set up a new program too for actually our, vice presidents and above where they get equity in these deals now, which is kind of cool. I'm excited about.
Heck yeah,
awesome. So I'm trying to like focus on how can I make other people millionaires now, because I think that's going to take me closer to being able to buy an NFL team one day. But by the time I can do it, I'm probably going to need 20 billion or 50 billion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm still, so the 48 unit, that was actually listed by a broker. But I was the second person to see it. I'm tight with the brokers. We've done a lot of work with them in the past. I was the second person to see it. I was the second person to put an offer in. And I was able to be really aggressive with how fast we could close. So basically we're closing. We went on our contract, I think like September 5th, and we're closing October, you know, 21st, 26th. So was that like 40 days or something?
And you think that's what's separating your ability to get the deal versus the next guy?
That one right there, it did. I have my bet is that I didn't have the highest price offer, but I could close 15, 30 days faster. And so the sellers, I knew too that time was important, because I knew the sellers were buying another property and they needed more funds. So they're going to 1031 from this deal into the next one. And I already had 1031 funds. I didn't have to go raise anything or whatever. And I had personal money that we're putting to work in it. So I knew we could close fast. So I'm like, okay, well, here's what we're going to offer, but hey, we can close by this date, which was basically a week ahead of when they needed to close by or wanted to really close by.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like we probably, someone probably offered 3-5% more and we got it without even being the highest bidder. And the other thing is too, is like, I've got a great relationship with these brokers as far as like, I've closed every single deal that I've done with them with no problems, no delays, whatever. So why would they not send it to
you first?
Yeah. So so like they're also going to them, they're saying, look, you know, he can close fast and he's going to follow through on it, because here's our track record with him. We've done, I don't know, I've probably bought like 6 deals, you know, from these guys or whatever. So, in the last like 6 years, 7 years. So that obviously helps. And then we've got, right around like 70 units in this area. And I've been calling on that one for, I think the first time I picked up the phone for that one was when we bought the other deal in that area, which that would have been 2016. So 8 years.
Just hounding them.
Like calling, had a meeting with them a lot. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many dozens of interactions that I've had with, and actually this won't air for a little while, so I'm fine. I can't say what I'm actually about to say, cause it will air before, but yeah, we've had dozens of interactions. Yeah. We've had dozens of interactions and, you know, it's finally looked like it's going to happen this year. Right. And so like, but that was one that came from the way that I prospect.
Yeah.
Trying to think, what else did we close? What else in the pipeline? There's another deal in the pipeline right now that's about, it's 98 units. That one I've been prospecting for a while. I don't know. I mean, it's the long shot. I think that happens soon. But yes. Like, it's still my main way to go. And like the way that I prospect, right? I'm not just like, there's other people that want to just like try to take a shortcut, I think, or whatever, and buy a list. Or AI is going to scrub this thing for me. And it's like, every time I've seen that, I actually did this with
one. There's still the human interaction.
Well, there's that, but also like there's properties on those lists that I've seen that like, okay, give me a couple of addresses. I'll look a couple of them up. I'm like, this is a freaking commercial building. You're not even looking to buy this type of building. And now you're going to spend time calling these numbers that you don't even know. Every number that's on my list, like I know the property. I know it because it's been on my database for a while, or like I keep adding to it. I've like seen it. I know it's our target, right? So my list is like way more qualified than these other lists that people try to go buy or scrub or whatever. So therefore I got to make less calls as well, because it's I know it's a fit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think there's some people that really try to work around like doing some of that legwork and whatnot, but I only tell other people to do and give advice based on what I've done, because I know it works.
Yeah, I mean, that's a time-tested true way, you know. But people just don't like making the cold calls
or setting up the list, or they want to be able to jump to it, which you know I get. But like, hey, they keep coming to me like, I'm like, dude, I've told you 10 times what you got to do. At least what I've done, right? Like,
what advice would you give me? Like, we'll just say you played in the league, you got out, and You got some capital. Like where would you start?
So if I were you,
if you're looking to own and operate your own property.
Yeah. I mean, if I were you, I there'd be no, like, obviously I'm always like bigger is better.
Yeah.
But that being said too, like if you start even with a 4 to like a 24 unit, so that way, and like honestly, if you're going to have more time on the back end, right? Like once you're done playing, and again, I hope you play, like it'd be sweet if you play for another 3 years or 4 years, whatever. Now, maybe you're like, shit, I don't want to play. Maybe I don't want to play that long. Like I hope you play for every second that you want to be able to play.
Yeah,
that
window is
so small. But you know, when you're done, like when you have more of that time, my biggest suggestion to you is if it's in real estate, you should operate every aspect of it so that you truly know how that works. Like you should give the tenant notices that you just bought the property. You should do the lease renewals. You should do the showings. You should do like everything so that you kind of see how that how all those pieces work. And what I've been telling people is like, well, we've been able to do is because we've got our own property management company. I can control it. Right. So I'm not in it day to day, but I from a board level and ownership level, I'm still controlling like the vision of where we're going. And so that's, I was telling you a little bit before the show, like where we're headed with it. And like, we're going to change property management and it's not even going to be recognizable anymore. And I think we're going to be able to get to a point where like any property, any multifamily property is worth more to us than anyone else because of how efficiently and how we can run our properties. That only came because like I've been in the dirt and I've seen how everything's done. I've done it all. And so that's where a lot of that came from. So like for you, having more time back, like whatever you're going to do, try to get more in the weeds in some of this stuff for a while so that you have experience with it. And I think that will help you build, like in my company, I've done every single role in my company. I've done every single role here.
I'm going to get beat out by Spalding Group and all my bids on these properties. So,
well, that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get to a point where like all these properties
your expenses are lower and you can operate more.
I want to get to a point where like, it doesn't even make sense for us to sell an asset to someone else. I want to get to a point where I can pay 10, 15, 20% more than anyone else because of how efficient, because we'll make it up on the efficiency.
You know, the expenses that you can cut out.
So, it's cutting out, but it's also service driven. So how can we be the best that like residents are seeking out? Cause right now, like you go look at reviews, they suck. In my opinion, they suck. 3.2, which is above average actually in property management business. Cause people always, you know, I mean,
you're saying that yours are 3.2?
Yeah. On Google, like 135 reviews or something that 3.2, which in my opinion sucks. When you go look at other property management companies, we're actually probably in the top, like, I don't know, we're, I would say, middle top, you know, somewhere between like mid and top, somewhere in that range.
So I'm sure people look at that, right, when they're Googling apartments.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I think that we can create a machine that like we can become the preferred place where people want to live. They're seeking out properties that we own and manage, you know, and so like it's everything. It's not just cutting costs. It's driving revenue. It's cutting costs, but it's also a service standpoint. It's also like I want to be done doing the piecemeal, you know, capital expenditure projects. I just like the last handful of assets we've bought, we've closed with enough money to be able to do all the capital expenditures like upfront. Because now once I'm done with that, it's just more efficient, right? We can move on to the next project. My facilities team can move on to the next project. The CapEx team can move on to the next project, not have to go back to that one over and over again. And now their attention's diverted, right? So I think it's like we're a year to 2 years. I mean, it's never going to be done, right? I think it's always going to be evolving. But I think, you know, we're a year to year and a half, maybe 2 years to start to see some of those results. And I think it's going to be... I think we can provide way better service and be the preferred, you know, company that people want to live with while taking our payroll from, like right now, all of our properties are between 8% to 12% of revenue is what we spend on payroll. I think we can take that number to like 6%. I think we can do that and we can actually have people here that are paid more, right? Because again, I think it's an efficiency thing. I think that they can be paid more and I think we provide better service while doing that. And if I do that, that's a lot of dollars dropping in net operating income. That's worth a lot of, it's on the value standpoint, it's a lot of value.
Yeah.
Right. And there's that much more cash flow dropping the bottom line. So whatever you want, whatever you're trying to do, again, whether it's business, you know, I mean, you know, again, you go back to like boring businesses. I mean, I know guys in the trash industry, trash and recycling that have made a ton of money. Porta potties, like ton of money. Like it's crazy, like boring businesses.
Porta johns.
But like guys that can get in and like really understand, can really understand the operations of it too, not just be the investor, but really understand the operations of it too. It just makes you that much more, in my mind, like dangerous because you're going to be able to see things that other people don't see.
Yeah.
I think like a good example is because I was in the weeds so much of everything that we've done, there's been deals that other investors have passed on, given to me, that we picked up for 30, we picked up a portfolio that everyone else passed on for $33 million. I did all the underwriting on it. I'm like, this is a no-brainer. I'm like, the next day we could sell this for $39 million, right? And this was back in 2021. Well, we're selling that whole thing right now. We're probably going to sell, by the time it's all broken apart and sold, we'll sell it for $52 million.
Sheesh. Good for you.
Numerous people passed on it. But it was because they were looking at like one different metric. Like that was it. They were looking at one metric. I was looking at six different metrics, and I realized it was a deal.
Yeah. Because I know when we were on those calls, I think every time we had a call, if there's someone new on there, I'd be like, what is your like cash on cash or your IR? Like what is the what you need? And you'd always be like, there's so many metrics based on the deal, like how it's being operated right now, and like
I look at
it's cap rate. The landscape. Yeah.
I look at cap rate. I look at cash on cash. I look at the price per unit. I look at everything, right? Yeah. There's some people that like they'll only do a gross rent multiplier. So they'll take like how much revenue the property makes in a year. They'll multiply it by they take some number like 8 or 10 or whatever. And I'm like, well, I'll pay a 13 gross rent multiplier on this property because what you're not looking at is the tenants pay all the utilities. That's an expense that I don't have. Right? So that means my NOI, like every dollar that comes in, a higher percentage of that is going to drop to my net operating income. It's worth more.
Yeah.
So you can't compare that. You have to be willing to pay a higher gross rent multiplier on that deal than another deal that's opposite of that.
Yeah.
But they put this one metric or they'll be like, oh, I only buy 6 cap rates. Well, shit, we just bought a year and a half ago, we bought a 4.75% cap rate. But the reason it's 4.75% cap rate, though, is because the rents are stuck in like low. 2012.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
So now you do the CapEx to it and you double the rents. Now it's a look, and you know, by year three, it's going to be a look back cap rate of 11%. Mm. So like when you only look at one thing, you're going to, but again, I think I picked up a lot of that stuff too, because like I realized when I would get a new property and we'd have to set it up in their system and I was doing this, you know, and doing the underwriting and being, you know, very deep at all those different things. Like I realize that it makes a huge difference if tenants are paying the utilities or not. It makes a big difference on if there's a property that has 1 acre of grass versus 20 acres of grass, but the same unit count on each, right?
Because before cap rate's so crazy.
You have less, you know, mowing costs, right?
Yeah.
If you have townhomes that don't have any common area apartment, common areas, right? Well, you don't have to heat, cool, or pay electricity for those common areas because they're not there. So inherently, like you can pay more for the property that's a townhome. So, but again, I think because you'll have some of your time back, if you're able to be in the operations early on, and again, it doesn't have to be that long. Like each role, like if you're in it for 3 months, 6 months, whatever, and then you build on that, then at least you've got experience there. And I think that you'll learn.
Really accelerate the learning.
You'll learn a lot. Yeah, you'll learn a lot.
Yeah, appreciate that.
So then all of a sudden, now it's like, now with what you learned on an 8-unit or 16 or 32 unit, whatever, you can go and duplicate that out at 100 units or, you know, and just keep, you know, going that way. But again, it doesn't have to be real estate. It could be like the sign business. It could be, you know, whatever other boring business, you know, whatever business is out there.
Absolutely.
But I think that knowledge, the value of that knowledge. And again, then if you can come in as an outsider to some industry and look at something a little bit different, right, to that now gives you a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
That's huge. Like with what we're trying to do, that's huge.
That's how you get deals that people are passing on.
Yeah. So that'd be my advice since you have more time back.
But that's great.
Cool, man. Well, Joel, anything else on your end? Alex, anything else on your end?
No, I appreciate you having me.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad you got on here. We'll link up. I'll try to remember to get you involved in that on some of that walkthrough stuff.
Yeah, I'd love that.
But yeah, thank you guys for watching. Thank you, Alex, for joining us. We'll see you next time.